Hi, I'm Jacqueline Musgrove, host of Scissortail Sessions. In addition to podcasting, I also am an abstract painter. Join me on Friday evening, February 5th, for Weston, Maine's Art in the Market, where my work will be showcased. Weston, Maine is located at 3 Northeast State Street, Suite 190 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. For more, visit the event page online, westinmaine.co. Hope to see you there. Welcome to Scissortail Sessions. My name is Jacqueline Musgrove with co-host Aaron Gibson. Join us as we share the threads that connect us all, simply being human. This week's guest is Kyle Roberts. He is the founder and creative director of Reckless Abandonment Pictures, based out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He and I actually worked together for about 5 years as video and audio producers for the Oklahoman and NewsOK.com. Back before podcasting was even a thing. So sit back, relax, enjoy. Up next, Kyle Roberts. What is reckless abandonment?
That's the question, right? What is reckless abandonment?
Yeah.
No, so we started Reckless Abandonment Pictures. I started it about 8 years ago. It's a video production company, full service video production, located here in Oklahoma City, our studios downtown. And we get the privilege, majority to, work with major toy companies and tell their stories.
That's awesome.
That's cool. That's pretty unique. I mean, I wouldn't say that there's a whole lot of people around Oklahoma, particularly that doing anything quite like that, are they?
Yeah, I think we're one of the largest stop motion toy companies, in the Midwest. From everything that I've gathered.
Is this something that immediately you're in the office downtown, or did you guys start in a basement at your house?
Yeah, we started it at my house, actually in my garage. We had like a stop motion studio. So the winter months were, you know, hard doing that. But it was, you know, really fun. Basically, we started playing with toys. First thing we did was recreated the 1987 Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on Instagram or something.
Cool, yeah. Doing that. The cartoon intro for that, frame by frame with toys. So it's like literally a recreation. And that got picked up by like LA Times and USA Today and Wired Magazine and all this stuff. And we did that, you know, a couple of things, just playing, you know, just having fun. And then DreamWorks contacted us, which was a weird thing. Like I was at home editing. It's like, it's a call from Burbank or whatever.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I just vividly remember like, get out of here. Like, I don't think I cussed at them or whatever, but I was like,
you think you're getting pranked?
Yeah, I did. I was like, no, okay, this is weird, you know, whatever, punk, whatever. But they're like, yeah, you know, we love, you know, Ninja Turtles and X-Men thing that you did. And we'd love for you to do that same intro treatment with our show, Dino Trucks, which is a big, I don't think it's like 6 or 7 seasons now, 3D animated show on Netflix. To do basically the same thing because it's, you know, kind of radical and fun, and it helps promote the toys and sell the toys. So that's kind of launched us into like actually getting paid to play with toys, sort of.
That's cool. So let's go back even further.
Yeah, I'm like, let's take it back further. So what are you into as a kid that spurred this, you know, obsession / passion for toys?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up always loving toys and playing with toys. And I was the nerd that had like X-Men and Ninja Turtle toys like in my backpack. So other kids were playing recess and I was getting out my toys and like playing with them. And I played, you know, at the recess too, but like I just always loved toys. And then kind of fast forward to like high school, we had a really great like broadcast journalism teacher.
Okay.
And so he just was really fun and encouraged us and was like really smart because he did new stuff for like 40 years or whatever. We got a lot of hand-me-down stuff from Mizzou. So at that time, it's going to show my age, but it was like a VHS camera. And I was you know, VHS to VHS editing. And I just loved it and was like there, you know, all the time. That one point, he's like, just knew that I loved it and believed in me and like you thought I had a gift and skill set and poured into that, which is great. And so he like duplicated his key to the school and to the editing bay and gave it to me. He's like, probably don't tell anyone that I'm doing this for you because they're not supposed to do this, but I know that you love it. So I'd go in there like Saturdays and like edit for like 8 hours. Like I had like a, it's called NBA Jam Session. It was like this best clips of the NBA and re-edit my own song music video, you know, kind of stuff or whatever.
I remember doing a similar thing because I was really into skiing. And so I would get a ski video and then like get some music from MTV or something. And then I would like dub my own and mix my own. And, just between VCR tapes and stuff.
Absolutely. It's just playing and learning and you know, continuing to grow at whatever, whatever this is. After that, stop me and tell me shut up whenever, but
keep going.
After that, I came here to Oklahoma Christian. I got almost like an 80% ride there, like for broadcast journalism. The VHS tape I submitted like got me that. And I don't even know like if that's a normal thing or, you know, it's normal. It's like athletes or like you have to be really smart or whatever. But I got it for that. And they believed in me to help grow their broadcast program with basketball stuff and everything else that we were doing there. And so that was a great opportunity. After OC, I worked with Jacqueline at News OK and the Oklahoman, as a videographer, editor. And, you know, we had a great boss, Dave Morris. And the thing I really loved and I will always remember about that job is that he always, said like, we always have these weird ideas, you know, for stuff. And he would always say, you know, yes, or like, let's think about it, not just like, no, and leave, you know?
Right.
And that really helped like transform me as a producer and leader now, learning a lot from him, and Dave Morris or Dave Jones, the Daves, just in how they treated us and how they, you know, related to us and just everything.
Yeah, I definitely remember that from when, you know, the paper was booming and News OK was just an infant, and they, I mean, we made the video studio and the podcast studio, and they never said no to an idea.
Yeah.
They always were like, yeah, let's dig into this and explore it, which was pretty cool for such a big company.
Absolutely. And just to let us be creative and figure out stuff, and some stuff worked and some stuff didn't work, you know, but like, that's how we, just how you learn. And it just really kind of inspired, you know, creativity, for like a news station, you know, like, I'll always like love and cherish that, like able to kind of grow there.
So, when you were starting out, when you got to OC, and even before that, were you already doing your own sort of creative stuff, making short films or making little commercial things, or like what was kind of your passion then and what type of stuff were you making then?
Yeah, just a lot of music video kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like I say music video, like editing to stuff to music. So like go out and just shoot stuff and edit it, you know, kind of thing. And just kind of keep playing and keep creating. At OC, I did, was really involved with their, like our news program there, and like sports videography and editing and stuff like that. So we had I think at that time anyway, it's probably not anymore, but we're the only like kind of smaller college that broadcast the games live.
Oh wow.
So and it was all student produced, so like that was something that we were really proud of, that we could do live, and it even broadcast to like our school, you know, so it's just like on our local channel or whatever. But that was really fun.
So did you guys at OC have a, like a news studio and you did the whole news program and everything?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Were you still on tape at that time, or had you moved to digital by that time?
I think it was a beta tape.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Beta was kind of still big for a while commercially.
We shot on a lot of like, it was like mini DV.
Yeah.
So it was
a
tape, but it was digital. And
I still have one of those.
Log and capture it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still have my too.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know this is completely useless.
Actually, they're not all bad, because at least you have media that doesn't just randomly disappear, you know, like a hard drive can.
Yeah.
So there's still benefits there.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember you dabbling in the stop motion stuff at News OK. Am I correct?
Yeah. That's kind of where all that story happened. Is I was there for 7 years. And during that time, like, you know, we just started playing with action figures, and that's kind of where that story picked up. And that actually led to, after that, you know, after all the millions of views on stuff and getting to do, the Dino Trucks thing, for DreamWorks, which was great, because it was the first like paid, you know, gig, and it was for DreamWorks, which was awesome. Then we got to be on this reality show called Viral Video Showdown.
Oh, wow.
On Sci-Fi Network. And that was a huge honor to kind of get to represent Oklahoma, sort of, because they brought a crew down here and they would film us like Oklahoma flag, you know, different things.
Yeah.
And so basically it was like a contest, like you see these food contests and different mm-hmm. things where they pinned us against like another video creator and gave us a task and gave us like 4 days to create it and kind of filmed us the whole time.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So it was super fun. And to kind of be on a reality show for what I do, not like Desperate Housewife or something like that, which I'm not trying to bash them, but it was like something my profession, you know, kind of thing for what I do. Inevitably, like that really helped kind of push all those things together to our first feature length film, which was The Post-Human Project, which released 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which is a live action coming of age teen superhero film. So it's kind of using superpowers as a metaphor for adolescence. And that won Dead Center here and then got us into San Diego Comic-Con, which was a huge dream. And I won Best Director at Orlando Film Festival.
That's cool.
Here. And all kinds of stuff. But yeah.
You know, and I don't know if you remember, but I helped on that film do the rigging and the rock climbing stuff out at Quartz Mountain.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that was cool. I remember doing that. But unfortunately, I have to admit, I have not seen the film.
Oh, no.
But I need to see it.
Well, you have no excuse because it's on Amazon Prime.
I know. I don't have any excuse.
For free.
So tell me if my memory's right. When you did Post-Human mm-hmm. and were doing those other early projects, were you still working full-time for the paper?
I was. And that was very, very challenging.
Yeah.
I'm going to, like, get really nervous talking about this, like, shake. We made that film for $90,000 for a superhero film, independent or not, is insane. And, you know, we ran out of money shooting. And so I did about 80 or 90% of the visual effects, like myself,
wow.
at home over a 10-month period. I had kind of a schedule where I would work on that until like 3 or 4 a.m. and then take a nap. And then, like, go to the Oklahoman. And I could only do that, like, 3 or 4 times a week because, you know, you can't do it every day, even though I loved it and something I wanted to do. And then we also had Sloane, which is our daughter, who was a newborn at the same time. And in some ways, it was really, really hard. But in some ways, that kind of worked out because she was crying like I was already up. So I just go in there, relieve Sarah a little bit, my wife. But it's like, you know.
You were stressed pretty thin.
It was, yeah. And to that point, like, I just remember, I'd say it almost like killed me, sort of. Like it was so draining.
Just taxing.
Where I felt like my heart was like just everything, you know, like my body was like about to shut down almost. Mm-hmm. So to a point where I promised my wife and our family and even like our core crew members that like I would never do that again, like make a film on that small budget for what we were doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like it was, you know, my calling card sort of, especially in that the film world, and it worked. Like the film made about 180% of what we made it for, which is always great for a film to make any money.
Yeah, that's cool.
This is going to be kind of an amateur question. $90,000, is that, I mean, is that just like basically making a movie for pennies?
Yeah. So I think we broke it down one time and like one of the Spider-Man movies came out around the same time or whatever, and was like one scene of like is like Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. It's like him walking down the road was our whole movie, and there was no special effects. It's like literally him like walking. It's like that was actually the budget of our movie, like 10 seconds of this part.
But like you said, that's become your calling card now. Like you have something to point to that's work you've done and that mm-hmm. people can look at, and that's going to propel you into other stuff. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, so essentially like that's everything kind of stacked up, you know, on each other. And that really helped launch the commercial career. Like we did the thing for DreamWorks, but then all of those things together really helped shows like, oh yes. And we've also done this independent superhero film and we've done these commercial work, you know, these mm-hmm. different things, and got us into Comic-Con. So that's been a big ticket for us. Because we've gone there every year the last 5 years with like a short film too, and that's a big part. We do this like 48-hour film race kind of thing and make a short film. We always try to have some type of superhero tie, one because it's what we love, but it's also like maybe it'll get us back to Comic-Con.
Yeah,
because they loved Post-Human and they straight up told me, it's like if you have anything, you know, that's good enough, like, we'll have you back, which is like cool. Like, so we have like the open door to get back to Comic-Con, you know, whenever we want, kind of thing. So, so, but when we go, like, I treat it as a work trip, and we like go and meet and network with as many people as we can. To fact, where I'm like so exhausted with it, because, and they don't want to, like, say, like, we talk to someone at Mattel or Hasbro or Lego or whatever, like, they're there not to talk to me, you know, like, they're there to sell toys and do everything else that they're doing. So it's like I'm like interrupting their time. But we try to get as many like quick 5-minute things that we can, and show them our like demo reel of our, you know, stop motion stuff. And it's a lot of like grinding, but it's always paid off doing that each year.
What's that like, getting a phone call from, I mean, as a child, I'm sure that that was like the gold standard toy manufacturer, like the Hasbros and the Mattels.
Yeah.
What was that like, getting that phone call?
It's been great. So when we worked with Mattel, we've worked with agencies a lot. Like, we have an agency we work with a lot called Tongle in Santa Monica. And then, so it depends on this way. And then one in New York that we work with quite a bit recently called QuickFrame. And so that's helped us a lot too, because now you have agencies that believe in us as creatives, and they're pitching like for us, and obviously they get a bump on that and get paid, you know, to do that. They also help us manage it too. So, you know, anytime, especially as a creative, if people aren't paying on time or like different things, like, you don't have to like reach out to them. They're going to take care of that, you know, which is great. So you don't have to have legal fees for that and everything else. Like, they keep everything on schedule and moving, which is great.
So you guys have definitely made it if you're at the point to where you have middlemen handling the...
Pretty much, yeah. I think we always...
The hassle.
Yeah, we always still probably favor doing it all ourselves. Like Dream, whenever we work with DreamWorks, we work directly with them. So the other project we got to do with DreamWorks was the Trolls stop motion series. And that was like a 10-month project, and it employed 70-some people in Oklahoma, and all of that. Cool. Like, I'm really proud of, because we got to also train people at that time that were in college or right out of college, and we've brought them back on other stop-motion projects, because this is something that I self-taught myself, and like watching YouTube videos and, you know, stuff like that, just playing, that I now have like a reckless abandonment like system of like green screen and blue screen and how we do it. You know, it's different than Leica or, you know, other like major stop motion studios. There are some similarities, but it's what I figured out. So I basically have this like playbook of like how we do stop motion.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Thanks.
That you had to figure that out yourself.
And yeah.
So is there any proprietary software of any kind that you also use, or is it stuff that's sort of out of the box, or anything that you've had to create or come up with?
Yeah, it's out of the box. So I would say almost every stop motion studio here or Spain or all over the world, they use Dragon Stop Motion. It's about $300, $300-$400, which is not a lot for what we do, for like the most professional software you can have. So anywhere between us and like Leica, which, you know, does every, does like the biggest stop motion movies, you know, kind of thing. We all use the same software.
Okay.
And it's very inexpensive, that you could do a lot with it. And then that basically relates to, we have an Adobe suite, you know, kind of thing after that. So After Effects and Photoshop and Premiere and all that kind of good stuff.
What do you remember, which bit of film you saw that was the first bit of stop motion you saw that you were like, I'm going to do that, figure that out?
I do.
What was it?
Do you know the story?
I don't.
Okay. Yeah, I saw Fantastic Mr. Fox with my nephews, and they were like 15 and like 8 at the time, or like 9 or something. And we got out of that, and we were like, that was amazing. Like, not only does it look beautiful, but like, it's a great story, you know, all this other stuff. And we're like, we could do that. Like, we could play with this. And that was just the time where like DSLR cameras were like just starting to come out. So not that stop motion is easy by any means, you know, it takes a lot of time, it's a labor of love, but it was just the time where it's now digital, and now, you know, just a little bit easier because you connect it directly to your computer and see your onion layers, you know, and all that kind of good stuff to build it out, versus just like working in the dark and clicking on a VHS camera or something.
Right.
You saw Fantastic Mr. Fox, mm-hmm. Then what was next?
Yeah, I think that weekend, honestly, I think that weekend it was Thanksgiving weekend, and we made something at their house. Like,
okay.
We got back, it was in Missouri, it was visiting family, and it was so dumb. It was like, we called it Marvelous Short, which is like Marvel characters, like talking to each other and being dumb. It's like Thor is like, like lifting weights and like
did
like
you guys talk, do the voices and everything for it too?
Yeah, so that was fun. We kind of made that like a family tradition, like over the next 4 years, like where they were going through like middle school and high school and stuff, that every time we went back for like Christmas or Thanksgiving, we'd make like a stop motion together. So if you go to our YouTube channel, all of them are on there, and some of them have like hundreds of thousands or millions of views, just because they're silly and funny, and you know, kids also love that.
That's cool. I had no idea that it was Fantastic Mr. Fox that was the first.
That definitely, I still, it's probably one of the top 10 movies of any movie of all time.
That's awesome. So you're doing Posthuman.
Yes.
You're doing stop motion.
Yes.
At what point are you like, I'm going to go out on my own?
So I got let go from the Oklahoman as part of a downsizing.
Sure.
Thanks for bringing it up. No, no, so
all great stories start there, though, right? Like getting fired or whatever, or laid off or whatever.
And at that time, I think that was like a Friday or something. And then that next Friday, we got really lucky and got to do like a limited theatrical release for Posthuman. And like that next Friday is when that started. At AMC, and that opening weekend, it sold more than any other, you know, major, you know, movie at that theater at Quail Springs Mall.
Wow.
And so, like, that was, you know, helped launch, you know, all of that, too. And we got to do that was kind of like a trial, you know, for them. Like, you can win your hometown, you can keep going. And so they ended up letting us do, like, a five-city thing. And we didn't have to pay for anything. So it's like they covered.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was like a 70-30 split, 70 AMC. But yeah, still, it's like we didn't have to do anything. Like, we gave them the file for the posters, and they sent those, you know, to the
places. So they did all the marketing, all the promotion?
We helped do some. They didn't do any marketing, but, like, there's posters there, and, sure, you know, it's on the marquees and stuff like that. But we helped do some marketing that was directly targeted to people who like, you know, Spider-Man and Avengers that are in those towns, kind of thing.
So it was literally just perfect timing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I don't know if Dave knew that. You know, I knew he knew that, but I don't know if that was why, like, he chose, you know, me for that cut or whatever, because he's like, Kyle's going to be fine. You know, like, this is going, like, because he's actually also experienced, from the boss side of it, experienced us, you know, and like rooting for us of getting in festivals, sure, and doing different things. So I think, but also trying to juggle all of that too, which is complicated. So I think in a lot of ways it's like, yeah, like here's, you know, a severance, like here's some money and just go and do that. That's what you need to do.
That's awesome.
Kind of thing. So I don't know.
That's great. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, find us at scissortailsessions.com. Be sure to stick around for our session breakdown after the interview.
So you also do music videos and stuff too. How many music videos have you guys done?
So if you count like Static, we did it at News OK. If you count that, which is it's a show that I produced there, where we featured local artists, and they're like almost like MTV Unplugged, you know, kind of thing, if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But it's kind of like we'd do like three songs with them and cut it and edit it and everything. So it's like a live performance music video. I've directed or produced over 100 music videos. So, yeah.
And
that's not editing the NBA clips. Actually with bands.
Right, like, right. You tend to work with local artists mostly, or have you got other national acts or anything?
So
like
we
that?
Did our actually just recently this summer, we did a stop motion music video for a band called Pomplamoose. If you guys are familiar with them, like love them. They're super creative. And they found some of our stop motion stuff. And so we started talking, and I guess they're growing like crazy and this might be their first, the solo album of their own stuff instead of covering stuff. Our first or second or something, but that's coming out soon. And so we did it for one of the songs for that. It's like a claymation stop motion
thing.
And that was really fun.
I love claymation. I mean, claymation is such a cool thing. Is that, it's obviously something you guys taught yourself too, but
and it is a totally different thing. Like,
yeah, the level of complication on that just seems amazing.
Like the toy stop motion stuff is, you have people that do stop motion with different things. You kind of find like a niche within a niche of stop motion. Yeah. So the toy stuff we just fell into because we love. But then, like, clay stuff is very moldable, and, like, all this, you have to have, non-drying clay, you know, because if you do Play-Doh, it's not going to work very well because it's going to dry that day. And on average, this is a question that gets asked a lot, we do about 4 or 5 seconds a day on stop motion. So in, like, an 8 to 10 hour, like, day, we end up getting about 4 or 5 seconds. So it's kind of crazy.
That just requires so much patience, too, you know, to be in that kind of production environment, too, and just
Yep.
Yeah, it's very focused.
For our listeners, can you break that down? Because I feel like some people may not totally grasp how amazing that is that you guys
sure.
do 4 or 5 seconds in a day. Like, what is stop motion?
Yeah, so if you see this bottle for the...
I was going to say, the next five seconds is going to take 30 minutes to create.
Exactly. So if you take a picture of this and like move it and take a picture, move it, take a picture, move it, take a picture, and then play it back, you see this animation of the bottle like spinning around. So if you're just hearing this on the podcast, you're not going to see it. But basically, if you have a still, it's motion to still objects. So it's stop in taking a picture and then the motion of it. So it's the stop motion.
Digital though, I mean, you get to choose your frame rate, right? So you're mm-hmm. choosing 24 frames or 30 or 60 or what?
Yeah, I hope we never ever do 60 frames for a stop motion. So 24 is the most that I believe anyone would really do.
Need to do. It's so crazy.
Yeah. So shooting on ones is 12 frames in a 24 frame timeline. So what that is 12 frame, 12 pictures a second. And that doubles every other frame. So it's actually it's actually smoother than 15 frames, even though that's more pictures. But because 15 frames is doubling every 3 or 4. So it's kind of smooth and then jaggy and smooth. So typically most studios would do 12 or 24. So 24 is shooting on twos then. And it's just even smoother. So the difference of that, if it's for average, kind of like consumer, if you see like Wes Anderson films like Isle of Dogs or Fantastic Mr. Fox, mm-hmm. they shoot that with 12 frames a second. So it kind of has a little bit more of a stop motion-y look to it, like kind of mm-hmm. a little bit more jittery, but still smooth. I mean, it still looks great, but most Leica films are 24 frames a second. And so in some ways it's almost a downfall to them because it takes way more time. But sometimes it could be a downfall because people, and some of our higher end commercial work that's 24 frames, sometimes they think it's CG or 3D.
Oh.
And if that's the case, then it's like, we just spent all this time doing this. Because a lot of people see some of the Leica films and they're like, oh yeah, the CG animated. And it's like, oh, well, they just spent 5 years, you know, animating that film as a stop motion. It'd been way, way easier to do through CG, you know, kind of thing. So in some ways, it can be kind of a downfall to do 24 frames because it is so smooth.
And so you're physically, if it's like the Ninja Turtle ones, mm-hmm. you're physically moving their arms, legs, their head
yep.
for each frame, right?
Yep.
And how's that work with the clay? You mentioned claymation.
Yeah, same thing. So the Pomplamoose music video, we did it all on a top-down rig. So the camera's up high looking down. And then so we're on a table moving everything around the whole time.
Now, are you the one physically moving it, or do you have someone on staff that would, that's their job?
Yeah.
Like what would that job be? The
An
person
animator.
That moves the clay, the animator?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So in stop motion, it's just called the animator. So,
okay.
I am one of our animators. We have hired, 4 or 5 different animators as well. The Trolls one, we had 4 of us going at one time. Studios in shift 2-day shifts, and
wow.
so it was just as much stop. And that's why I said it was still a 10-month, you know, process of the whole thing from pre-pro to final deliverables kind of thing.
And you guys, I'm assuming, would write everything out. Of course, you got your story, you got your script, but then you also storyboard it too as well.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And on the writing part, we've done different things. So like we did a Thomas and Friends series for Mattel. They had different writers and then we came in and then brought that to life. We prefer doing it all from the beginning, even if we're collaborating with, you know, DreamWorks or whoever, because I just remember that was a really bad project from a creative side. It just was on a lot of things. We went through 4 different brand managers at Mattel of Thomas during the time that we were doing that. And each one had a different vision of that project and a lot of projects. And we're like, no, that was a long time ago that stuff was approved. Anyway, that's
a
whole other story. And we couldn't. I mean, that's like, you know, we're doing, you know, like I said, 4 seconds a day of animation.
Yeah,
just
it takes too long to
restart or tell them it's this much money, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so... That was kind of a crazy thing because that's what taught us. It's like, and they asked us like, you know, are there any red flags with these scripts? And I told them some, and they're like, but can you do it? It's like, we could try the best we can. And those things came up later, to bite us, everybody, the whole, everything. Anyway, but with DreamWorks, we wrote it with them. But storyboards are always key. So especially when you're doing stop motion, with live action stuff, sometimes some key scenes that are like everyone's trying to wrap their head around. I like storyboards, and especially if you have a client, so everyone's on the same page. But otherwise, with live action stuff, I like to have us like feel it out there, and I feel like that also brings a lot to it, the kind of honestness of what you're doing. But with stop motion, because you're doing 4 or 5, you know, seconds in like an 8 or 10
hour
day,
you have to have it down.
Yeah, you have to. Everyone has to be on the same page, yeah. And especially if you're working with a client. But even if not, we do storyboards, you know, just for our own your own stuff too, because. Yeah, I don't know how you would do it without it.
Right.
So are you wearing that hat as well, or do you have expert storyboarders?
Yeah, so we have two artists that we work with a lot, Jonathan Kelsch and Jerry Bennett. I don't know if you've heard of either one of them. They're both also comic book artists. And Jerry was last year, he was the artist at resident at Skirvin downtown. And so they'd have like, you know, basically he was there most days, and kids would come in or families would come in and kind of show them how to like draw and all that kind of good stuff. But they're both super talented, super fast, which in our world is both very important to get stuff, you know, turned over and approved by the client.
So where do you see like the animation work that you're doing, the claymation work, things like that going? Like what's kind of the next step in the technology that you see happening or that you want to even pursue?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, That's the fun thing about stop motion is it's, you know, this age old like craft, you know, since the 20s or 30s, you know, and yes, like our team, you know, we mix like live action with stop motion, with 2D animation, with 3D animation, you know, all these things together, because it doesn't have to be this, you know, they'll have like hardcore stop motion animators sometimes comment on like, that wasn't a stop motion. It's like, okay, well, it was. But, you know, it's just this combining all these different forms of art together. So, I mean, maybe more of that. It would be really great to see. We did the first 360 stop motion for DreamWorks with Trolls. So maybe more stuff like that, like augmented reality.
Like virtual reality type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of augmented reality, virtual reality, 360, maybe like a whole experience that's also stop motion, which would be a whole next task to do, because you would have to have, like CG, you can plug into a 360 space because it's made on a virtual camera, you know?
Yeah.
So stop motion, you'd have to shoot it with multiple cameras physically because it's a physical thing.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But we've actually pitched some augmented reality stop motion. Say for example, it's like Trolls actually, like on the back of the toy, it's like Poppy jumping and like coming to life on the back of the toy through an app. And then you can roll through that with like all of them. So you can kind of see that toy already coming to life, on the aisle.
That's really cool. On your website, I saw you're an award winner. Do you want to tell us about those Emmys?
Yeah, we've,
I know.
We just win all the time.
We see
places.
You brought all 17 of those with you today.
Yeah. See? Actually one time, this is kind of a fun story. I got to pitch, Jack Black, a series, an animated series. And I took my Emmys with me and I set them on the table. And I was like, so what are we talking about? And he thought it was hilarious. Like, I don't know if I would do that to like Lego or some like big, you know, bigger corporate thing or whatever. But I mean, like, I like brought him on the plane because I didn't want him to get damaged. So I was like, I'm holding him with me.
He seems like a pretty cool guy.
No, he was awesome. And that was a great experience that it didn't end up working out. But like, just to get, we went to his house. Like, I don't know if you guys follow Jack Black on Instagram.
I do.
Yes,
like,
I saw his
huge backyard and pool and everything else. So we like met over there, you know, by his pool and just.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He literally is like his character in School of Rock. Like that was like who Jack Black was. Like so fun and energetic, but also creative and like, yeah, it was awesome.
How'd you get the opportunity to pitch to him on that? I mean,
yeah, I don't know what all I could talk. I mean,
maybe you can't.
Yeah, it didn't end up working out. It was a property by a well-known author, like one of the biggest kids authors, say that, and they like own all of the rights to his stuff, and we'd already been kind of in talks with them about some commercial stop motion stuff, and then they basically reached out to us of like, we believe in you as a creative, like pick any of these properties of some of these kids books, and you know, we'd love to hear your take on what it would look like as a series kind of thing. So we kind of wrote like a mini Bible of like in treatment of what that would look like, and that author loved it, which was exciting for us. And then Jack Black actually did the audio version of this kid's book, and so I was like, man, why don't y'all see if Jack Black wants to. He's already invested to a certain degree, and
yeah,
he would be great, you know, at being like the lead animated voice in this. And that's basically what he said. It didn't end up working out, but he said he's never done a TV show, like animated voice for a TV show. So that's one of the reasons that he was like really excited about it. And the whole thing kind of just didn't work out. They sold it to like a CG studio who optioned it for a few years or whatever. So I hope they do something with it. But yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
But on to the awards.
Back
to the awards. So you won Dead Center for Post-Human.
Yeah, and then we got to travel all around with that. So it's like I won Best Director at Orlando Film Festival, and that was a great experience for me because like my mom was there, and like she lives near Orlando. I lived near Orlando. She actually passed away this past January. But just like being there with her and experiencing that with her, and like we had no – that's a big festival. It's like – I think it's the biggest one in Florida. It's downtown Florida or downtown Orlando and everything. And like, so they do the awards like outside. And so like a bunch of people just gather around. It's like, oh my gosh, like this is, you know, this is awesome. And then, yeah, we got, took us to San Diego Comic-Con and then took us to, Japan, which they flew Sarah and I there. And that was probably out of all of these things, we're just, I'm just bragging about the time in my life. I felt like the most big time, cause they didn't know that. They just thought I was like this awesome celebrity of like this, this filmmaker.
Yeah.
And on the cover of their like brochure for the, it's Okinawa Comic Con. So Okinawa is like another smaller island, you know, off of the mainland in Japan. And, they, on the cover of it was like a Marvel Comics artist, a DC Comics artist, and then me.
Oh my god, so
for them, everyone, and they had all of our booths like right by each other, and so everyone was getting all of us to sign the cover of their brochure that they, you know, get, or their book or whatever. So my hand was sore for like 3 days of signing autographs, but that's, it felt like the most big time that I have so far, probably just from that. And like, I'm not even, I don't speak their, I don't speak Japanese, you know, but I'm just like signing all this stuff and taking pictures of the people and like, you know, all this stuff. So but it was fun.
Do you still have moments of like pinching yourself, like this is surreal, like in that moment are you like I should not be here, like what is going on? Or
no, I should be there and I have a lot of confidence. No, no, honestly, so as far as that goes, I had before Post-Human, I love Dead Center. I really believe in, I don't know if people know this, like especially here locally, we are very lucky to have that in our backyard because all the film festivals we did with that and some of our short films, it's one of my favorite of all of them. And not only because it's here, but it's because it's really well attended. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have been, like, it's almost always sold out of like just about everything. Like all the parties are fun and like they have great outdoor stuff, like at Mary Garden, just everything. It's just a really well done festival. And so before that, I think like the 3 years before that, I had either a music video or a short or something, like the music, stop motion music video we did for the Nims. Do you remember that? Mm-mm. As a local band? But basically they were like arcade characters of themselves playing this game. And so that was like big head mode, stop motion kind of stuff, like Mario almost kind of thing. And that got into Dead Center. And that was the first time that it helped me realize like I have a voice and it can be heard, because I didn't really think that before, you know. It's like we're making stuff, and this is before, you know, the Viral Vita Showdown and different things. Like I was probably 23 or 24, like, you know, at News OK for a year or two, and getting to be creative and do stuff there. But it's like no one really cares what I do, you know, what I do or whatever, because we didn't get feedback from anybody, you know. You post it and, you know, you never know, you know, what's happening. So like getting like that audience like feedback, much like a stage actor or something, was like really eye opening to me of like, hold on, like this is a different thing and like gift that God has given me and like team that we bring on and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What's next for you?
Yeah. So the next film is a faith-based coming of age adventure drama. Yeah, all those things together.
That's a mouthful.
It is. But if you want to put it in a box, it's kind of a weird mix of like Stand By Me, Goonies, and Footloose, all kind of wrapped in one.
Kevin Bacon's in it?
I don't want to give it away. No, I'm just kidding. He's not, but we are. I can't say that either.
Okay.
We are trying to go after a couple big name actors to be their parents that I'm really excited about and hope it works out. Essentially, it's kind of inspired by the Book of Job, from the Bible, set in a modern day high school world. And that's something that's been a big passion of me since I was in high school. And I feel like God's kind of done everything, you know, this kind of like need to create. It's not like you're just, I'm just going to do it for fun. It's like this internal like need to produce and like create, kind of all led to this. I hope this isn't too weird or like personal, but when I was 18, I like came home from a party. I think I was drunk, but I was like sitting in bed, like praying. And I felt like it was an audible sound. I felt like God was saying, I have something to show through you. Let's go. And that scared the crap out of me at the time. But that's basically, that's when I started getting more involved in like this broadcast journalism class I was in. And like, you know, just started doing that and did everything that we just talked about. I felt like it's all kind of leading up to this movie, and maybe this is that thing that he was like talking about. It's like,
is this something that you have developed yourself in terms of written it yourself, or you work with other people?
Yeah. So my nephew actually, so take you back to the Fantastic Mr. Fox story, is, now he's in LA and he's a writer, and he's 26, 10 years younger than me. But I've worked with him since he was 12, like literally since we've, you know, played and made films and, you know, all this stuff. So, and now he's a writer in LA. And so it has been an honor and like privilege for the last like 3.5 years that we've been crafting this script. And it's been really challenging, because when you say a faith-based teen, you coming of age, it's like, no, I don't want to see, especially teenagers. Yeah. Like, nah, man, like I don't want to do that. But it's been, we know that that's the struggle and like the challenge. And I just feel like that's something like God has called me to do, is to speak life and like truth and tell an honest story of honest teenagers going through real problems. But it's also, it's this fine line, but also it's not Wolf of Wall Street where we're dropping F-bombs like every other word, you know, kind of thing. So we've been really crafting that of like what that looks like and what that means. And we kind of call that, I learned this through Young Life as a volunteer leader, but call that like earning the right to be heard from the audience versus, and I don't want to say every faith-based film, but a lot of faith-based films that are just really cheesy. I feel like they have their message, which you should have a message, but then they literally like cram it down your throat, the audience's throat, like 10 times to even the second time. You're like, I get it. Like, you don't have to say that over and over and over again. So we're very much more about, giving the audience 2 + 2 versus like, here's 4, eat it, you know, kind of thing. Which would, and you know, of course, everything we do is very visual and very story, you know, so basically it's these kids that end up going on this big, like adventure trip. And I don't want to give away a lot of things, because the main part of the story will, but they're really wrestling with a lot of things. So the need for it is like teen anxiety and depression and ultimately like suicide, which is way too common today. And the stats we have are alarming. It's like 1 in 5 kids will have severe depression before they reach adulthood. And it's like 1 in 20 at any given time in the U.S. would be clinically like called like severe depression, going through severe depression at any given time. So that means you go into a classroom or a Zoom virtual classroom,
right?
And probably one of those kids would be like clinically severe depression, whether they know it or not. And that's the scary thing with depression and anxiety. You know, you break your bone, your knee, and it's sticking out like you're going to the ER. But when it's internal, it's very much harder to find and figure out. And that's why it's like 80%, one of the stats we have, 80% of depression is not curable but manageable, but only like 20% of people seek treatment. And so this film kind of wrestles with a lot of different things, but it's told through this like adventure drama kind of thing. So I'm really excited about it.
That's really cool. So if people want to find more about that and or your past projects, where do they go?
Yeah, all of this stuff is on ra-pictures.com. So we have a page that's like commercial work, and that has like, you know, commercial stuff we've done for Paycom and like NBC Bank, but then other stop motion stuff for Hasbro and, you know, all these other different things. And then we have like a film page and different stuff like that.
And does it have a title yet?
Yes, it's called What Rhymes with Reason.
Okay.
And it's not treason or see, it's not a question. it's kind of a poetic way to say like, why do bad things happen to good people? And so there's two things that it's not going to ruin the movie, but we like pose during it. It's like, who is God and why do bad things happen to good people? And that's something like, no matter what people's beliefs are, they ask themselves that throughout their life, you know, those couple things. And we also don't ever set out to answer them or like make people feel like that we're manipulating that or whatever, but we want to pose them kind of throughout the film.
And is this a story that takes place in Oklahoma?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Very nice.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Kyle.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
Not at all.
Right on.
Kyle's episode was pretty exciting. I love seeing the success he's had, especially beginning at News OK with me and then branching out on his own and working with the big time, Mattel, Hasbro, even meeting Jack Black. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's neat to see someone go from the roots and origins of what he's come from and really create his own way and become so good at it and really carve out a niche for himself in this industry.
It's pretty impressive, and I wish him the best on his next endeavors with What Rhymes with Reason. Look forward to seeing that hit, I guess, the movie theaters?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll probably have to get an update from him and just see what happens with that one. I have to add that I actually did recently watch Post-Human Project because I felt bad after our interview that I hadn't seen it yet. And I was really impressed with the level of special effects now that I had the insight into some of the things he was talking about. The level of special effects and the music in particular, I thought, were both really cool things about the film. And of course, being a rock climber, I was taking note of the rock climbing scenes too and thought those were really cool.
Yeah, little known fact, Oklahoma has some nice rock climbing in the Wichitas and Quartz Mountain. I guess for me, the takeaway or most interesting little bit of information was I'm super curious which children's author he was not able to disclose to us. I mean, do you think it was the Harry Potter creator?
You know, that's what I thought when the way he said it. So I guess it's going to require a little bit of investigation on our part if we want to find out who it is.
Yeah. So if any of our listeners are good at the Googles and can figure out who worked with Jack Black creatively that was an author, email us and let us know.
Yeah. Or if you know Jack Black, you know, maybe you could just reach out to him. I don't know. Maybe there's something contractual. He can't reveal it.
I'm just a curious person and want to now know who that was. Definitely want to thank Kyle for joining us in our studio and taking the time out of his busy schedule to do this interview. It was very informative and exciting, and I love seeing success come out of Oklahoma. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, find us at scissortailsessions.com.